And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Wapagan Umpagi Pagan, joined as always by Ian McNally and Bahir Yusuf. Happy New Year, happy 2018. And because it is a new year, we're going to do a roundup of 2017. I've asked the boys to pick three of their favorites from the last year and one absolutely dismal movie that they despise to talk about. It's a tough list to come up with, also because I did a rough count and the three of us have averaged about 200 movies in 2017. I managed to pick 15 that I really, really enjoyed that I thought were kind of standouts in cinema, and then kind of whittled it down to three. And I know you did the same thing, Ian. Bahir is a lot more, I guess, decisive in his decisions. I picked three.
I went through the list of the movies I saw, just like off the top of the BFM podcast page, and just like, okay, I like that, I like that, I like that. Oh, no, this stood out. And it's just like, okay, I've got three, I'm done, move on.
Yes. Yeah, I think this is going to be my ongoing test of dementia, because there was two movies this year that I had to look up after we'd reviewed them, because I had no idea what they were. And I've forgotten what they were now again.
That's what happens when you've seen 200 movies.
Yeah.
Now, it's also a difficult list to compile, because some of the best movies we haven't had a chance to see because they haven't come to Malaysia yet.
No Florida Project, no...
No Shape of Water.
Shape of Water.
The Post, Battle of the Sexes, yeah. Lady Bird.
Lady Bird, yeah.
Call Me By Your Name. Yeah. Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Darkest Hour. The Disaster Artist. Molly's Game, which is Aaron Sorkin's directorial debut. All of these things haven't hit yet. I mean, they've hit in the US, I guess, in limited release mostly because they're trying to get it out there before Oscar season.
Yep.
So they still qualify for nominations. But I think these are movies that we'll definitely be talking about this year in 2018, right? And one of the movies on your list, Bahir, actually was a 2016 release, but all of us only got to see it in 2017. So for all intents and purposes, we're counting it as a 2017 movie.
It's our
2017 movie. Another disclaimer before we get into our list is that we're talking primarily about American and British movies, and with good reason, because I've watched a lot of local movies this year. I forced Bahir to watch a lot of local movies this year, and I don't think you can even compare them.
Thanks for that, by the way.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Next year, my friend, there's always 2018.
And I don't think you can even compare them in the same breath, because for the most part, they have been absolutely garbage, with the exception, you know, of maybe Abang Long Fadil 2, which was very, very good. Mm. Tom Biru has an honorable mention.
Yeah.
For not being crap.
Yes.
But for the most part, they've been overwhelmingly average at best, terrible at worst.
Well, I don't know, even at worst, terrible as expected. Really.
Actually, you're right, terrible as expected. So if you're wondering why we aren't talking about Malaysian cinema, it's with good reason. We have very little nice things to say about it.
Well,
here's hoping 2018 is a better year.
Well, I'll have something to say.
You will have something to say about it.
Yeah.
But let's get into our list. Ian, let's kick things off with you. What's your first best movie of 2017?
Well, it came out in January here, so I'm going to start with J.A. Bayona's A Monster Calls. I remember seeing the trailer for this film in 2016 and being like, what is this? And just hearing Liam Neeson's delightful tones over the course of this trailer, just saying, you know, there's this child who had all these problems, and then he called for a monster. And it was just, and you're like, what is this movie? And what I got was... One of the things I love about cinema is subversion of your expectations. It's why the Marvel movies are so good these days with trailers, as we've talked about on panels and things like that.
Yeah.
And with this movie, I didn't know what I was getting. Was I getting some realistic, in fact, you know, fantastic realism, magical realism story? Was I getting some kind of metaphor or something? And it's a story of a boy who's confronted with three stories that will, before he has to reveal who he really is to this monster, while his mother is slowly dying of cancer. And I just thought it was an absolutely beautiful way of dealing with loss and, before it even happens, loss. And also had incredibly well-realized child characters. Mm. Like, the kid acts out because his life is going down the toilet. And I thought that's so human thing to show. And, like, many other movies wouldn't have shown it the way they did. They just managed to capture, like, real humanity at the center of this. And fantastic performance by Sigourney Weaver and by Lewis McDougall and Felicity Jones as his mum. Toby Kebbell as well is great in this. And just...
And the voice of Liam Neeson.
And the voice of Liam Neeson. And just the way the creature, the tree creature that Liam Neeson is, the way it's done. And there's a painterly style to these stories he tells in flashback that illustrate his stories, of the tree stories of what the monster happens. And I just... It utterly charmed me, and I just, again, I found it emotionally devastating, and in a good way. And I just thought it was an absolutely great movie to show to kids that are coming teenagers and learning about the world and becoming adults. It's a great coming-of-age story, and coming-of-age with your emotions.
I absolutely love this movie. I saw it three times in the cinema. I cried every single time. It is also a remarkably underwritten movie, in the sense that there is so little exposition. Everything is told through stories.
Yeah.
And you have to work out what those stories mean for yourself. And in cinema as well, I mean, it plays out like a children's storybook.
Yeah.
And even some of these phenomenal animation scenes they have in between actually work really well to complement that style of storytelling. It is Jay Bayona's doing, you know, he's doing like... And I don't mean this in a bad way. He's doing like a Guillermo del Toro light, if you will. And I only say light because Guillermo, this is more rooted in reality.
It's
Guillermo del
like
Toro is a bit insane.
It's J.A. Bayona's Guillermo del Toro's The Princess Bride.
Correct. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
You haven't seen this, right?
I haven't seen this yet.
You
actually
need to watch this.
Yeah, right?
Although, so, you know, forget everything I said about it, mostly... devastating.
Oh, no.
I have bigged this movie up too much for other people who came out and are like, it wasn't that emotional, devastating.
Oh, really? I mean, everyone I've kind of bigged this movie up to was a whimpering mess by the end of it. Mm. So I'm quite happy that they are.
Yeah, it could just be that Gavin Yap has no soul.
That is entirely likely.
That is entirely likely.
No, A Monster Called was a tremendous piece of work. I think what made it stand out in particular is... the child actor is the performance by...
Lewis McDougall.
I think he carries the film. 99% of the film, the camera is on him.
It's just his face.
And it is amazing acting. There are tremendous moments of silences and tremendous moments of rage.
Pure rage
that really carry this movie.
Yeah.
Ooh, really good. You have to watch it.
I have to watch it now.
Yeah. Go check out A Monster Calls. Good choice, Ian.
Good choice.
Yeah. But hey, what about you?
I think I'm going with a slightly obvious choice here, Dunkirk.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but...
You don't have to be creative for that.
No, but it's. I think because it could have so easily have been a big bow wow explosive filled movie, right? But it
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Ugh. Sorry, you're right. It could have easily been Pearl Harbor, but it wasn't because unlike Band of Brothers, unlike a lot of these other films where war is, there's a side winning. This is specifically about a side that's on the losing side. Like they're leaving. They're trying to run, mm-hmm. and the way Nolan does the three storylines interweaving between three different timelines was just magnificent. It opens up, and you're not entirely sure where everything is. You assume they're all in the same timeline, but then you realize they're not. One guy's the Tom Hardy storyline is in an hour. What, you know, the boat storyline is in a week. It's amazing, and I think that was great. It was shot wonderfully. There are a couple of, I mean, if you go online, there's a Vox video about how they used sound to just keep tension going, and it's amazing.
This is the one with
the never ending
tone. The notes seem like they're always going up, even though they're not. You're not really switching it very cleverly.
It's just. At the end of this film, I was panting. I was spent. It was just tired.
And seeing it, it's one movie that, like, you know, Christopher Nolan talks about going to the cinema. It is
absolutely.
In IMAX and Atmos. Amazing.
It's amazing. It's an experience.
Dunkirk was one of those things that kind of reinvigorated what it means to go to cinema, right? I mean, the last time a movie did that for me was Gravity. I mean, I left watching Gravity going, I will never be able to experience this movie the same way again unless I see it in cinema.
Also, I'm never going to space.
There's that.
Because death.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, you love Dunkirk too. I mean, we all kind of just...
Yeah.
I mean, for me... Okay, so as you well know, I have my issues with Christopher Nolan and his previous two movies. But Dunkirk was a true return to form in the sense that it was him at his least self-indulgent. He was just... He was experimenting with cinema rather than pulling a Peter Jackson.
Oh no, but the other thing as well is it's so sparsely written, right?
It is.
It's all in the imagery. It's all in the emotion.
But everything is at service to the story. He wants to tell the story.
Exactly.
I mean,
we've
talked elsewhere on another show about Ridley Scott's All the Money in the World, which is, it feels like a kind of a slightly, for to me, it felt like a slightly flat historical tale. In this, Christopher Nolan makes that part of the story. The fact that it's like, it's looking at these separate things happening. Yeah. And that's the way the style, the music, everything goes into giving that feel of you're seeing what's actually happening. Or I think he said, he wanted to put you on the beaches. He wanted you to be there. Yeah. So everything works towards that. So even like, you never figure out the, you never find out the name of the main character that you're talking with on the beach.
Yeah.
And like, oh my God, so many ships sink. All those ships. Like,
even the main character that the film opens up with that you're following doesn't have many lines. He's got no backstory about my family, my
because there's feelings. The moment you do that, also you get shot. But the other thing is, like, you can just see they take one look at each other on the beach and they can see what each other's been through just to get to the beaches and from also, wherever they were.
And it's not, you don't really want to sit down and swap, you know, village stories or girlfriend stories at that point, right? You just want to get home. You want to get out of there.
One of my favorite scenes in any movie, actually, is from Saving Private Ryan. And there's a fantastic scene where one of the characters is essentially pleading and negotiating for his life as he's about to get killed, as he's slowly getting killed, right? And it was one of these tremendous Spielbergian moments. And Nolan channels that throughout this movie. There are all of these great moments which show the desperation of what it's like, and the emotional resonance that comes out of these sequences is so apparent. Nothing is forced. There is so little dialogue, and yet everything seems to work. And it's just the execution for this is absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Dunkirk
and Tom Hardy in a mask again, acting his heart out.
Yeah,
talking like this.
Yeah,
but being great. I was like, all right, chaps, let's go.
Yeah,
tally ho, let's carry on.
Great. Yeah,
lost the wingman, no problem. Just check tanks. Yeah. Off we go. I also love the fact that there's no Germans in this movie. Like, you don't see the Germans. They're just this presence. Like, that's just a brilliant choice.
I don't need, like, a mustache-twirling bad guy, right?
No, you don't need Achtung Minefield. They just...
Well, they do appear at the end, though, when they capture Tom Hardy.
Oh, yes, the only time you see them.
But only, like, Shadow. Yeah. As Spectre. You don't really see their faces or anything.
They're just there. They're just dread. Yeah. It's like a horror movie.
Also a good choice, buddy.
Yeah, thank you.
My first choice for the best of 2017 would have to be Get Out by writer-director Jordan Peele.
It's not a comedy, guys.
It is not a comedy.
Or musical.
Or musical, the Golden Globes think it is.
Yeah.
And all of the hype aside, I mean, Get Out was a Blumhouse production made
And thank
for...
you, everyone, for not ruining the hype for us.
We were not spoiled.
We had to wait a while to get it.
Yeah.
But all the hype aside, I mean, it was a Blumhouse production that cost $10 million to make, and then it makes over $100 million at the box office, blah, 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 whatever, all of that aside, it is a tremendously well-written movie that is one of the best metaphors for race relations in America, because it is not a comedy, but it is tremendously funny and incredibly astute in its depictions of not just African Americans and white people, but the interplay of those characters. And it's not, at absolutely no moment is it a caricature.
No, or preachy.
Because all of these other movies that we've seen that try to do this either tip into incredible moralizing, or they paint the other as this caricature of, oh, white people are so stupid, or black people are criminals, or whatever, you know, as a kind of tool to tell the story. I mean, even in some of the more subtle depictions in a movie like Crash, for example, we do see these caricatures come to light. Meanwhile, in Get Out, there is a Jordan Peele, there is a subtlety in his depictions of everything that is perfect.
Yeah.
I have nothing. There was nothing bad about this film. I was hooked from beginning to end, and even the ending, even the way he wraps everything up. Yes, it's a happy ending. And yes, you could have gone down a darker route, but with a movie like this,
you need
to have that level, that one minute moment of hope, right?
In 2017, we need hope.
Yeah. God, yes.
And I think it was also interesting that how far into this can we talk about? Are we worried about spoilers?
I think it's been out for a year. I think we can give away a little bit.
Right, okay.
Be vague.
So I think it's interesting how the I don't know the name of the family, but the Whites are not trying...
The Whites,
right? They're not trying... It's not a sinister thing. They're not trying to... They're not hunters. They're not trying to kill black people. You know, what they're doing is they almost want to assimilate, right? Because they see that...
They think what they're doing is absolutely right.
Right, yeah. And they're thinking almost like on a Nazi, like, genetic level, right?
But so, they've taken it to a weird degree.
Completely weird
space.
So
they see the African-American culture as being predominant in the next 20 years. Yes. So, they're getting on the ground floor.
As opposed to getting lost in history, they're like, we're going to get into that.
Mm.
And that's a very interesting sort of, it's an interesting storytelling thing, because I expected it to be we want slavery back, we just want to release African Americans into this big jungle that we have and want to hunt them down kind of thing, which is straight
up, or send them home or do something like that,
which is just straight up what you'd expect. But in this one, there's a weird subversion of no, you guys are going to rule us, so as opposed to getting lost, we're going to get in on the ground floor.
Yeah. That's also another example of a movie where there's, you know there's a twist going in.
Yeah.
Or you hear there's not so much a twist, there's something going on. And something similar to on TV with Stranger Things, where when things start to build up and you start figuring out what's going on, it's constantly surprising. And that's, yes, it's dark, it's crazy, it's weird, but it's a delight to be surprised in the cinema.
Right.
And to think like, oh, they're going some really weird places with this, and I like the weird places they're going.
Yeah.
Like, they're interesting story ideas, they're interesting ideas to explore,
yeah.
And that is one of the best things about cinema, I think.
Absolutely. Ian, choice number two.
I'm going to go full anime.
Oh, look at you.
After getting devastated by Your Name in 2016, because we got that at the tail end of 2016, so I think for some people, Your Name would be some... places around the world, Your Name would be a 2017 movie.
It would be, yes.
But we got it in December, so it's not that one. But A Silent Voice was just another movie that I was just going to expect, okay, high school anime, whatever.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, it's like, that's so fetch. And just was not expecting what I got. And what I got was a really incredible tale of the growing up from like young age to older age and dealing with people with hearing disabilities and seeing different people grow together and tear themselves apart and like all just really human interactions and just incredibly well-made, well-told story. And again, I expect that from like my Studio Ghiblis and stuff like that. But I think since Your Name, I've been looking for these a lot more. There's lots of great anime, nothing about great anime, but after the 87th episode of Bleach, I was like, how much more is there to go on this? You know what I mean? With this, it just was so heartfelt and dealt with bullying in a really smart way. It wasn't like the bully's the bad guy, which is in every, we've seen it in It, we've seen it in everything. This was so much more nuanced and so much more human. And I just thought it all came together incredibly well and again left me in tears.
It was also some of the best depictions of disabilities that I've seen in any movie, period. I thought it was just a very great representation of what of the inner mind of someone with a specific disability, right?
Yeah.
And you're right. The idea of the bully being the bad guy was constantly subverted throughout this film. And also who the bully was was constantly twisted and turned throughout this entire film.
Yeah, because one kid got pinned with it. And even though he was bad, he was ignorant. And I think it's something that – it's another film that probably should have made my list, was like Wonder did something similar where it was explaining what they were reacting to or how do you deal with this kind of thing, and kids are dumb. They fall over a lot. They do stupid things and they don't know. I mean, there's a classic example. I think it's a comic online called Lunar Balloon, and it's like the kid points like, oh, look, daddy, a witch, because she's got a mark on her nose or something like that.
Right,
kids are going to do those kind of things. And when they're in classrooms and you've got a weird teacher, things can happen, and like it all gets pinned on one guy and almost ruins his life. And when he meets up with the deaf girl later on, it's like he feels like he's the worst person in the world and has done for years. And there's a glimmer of hope and redemption for him there, and also other problems. And just like the gang that comes together and everything. It's incredibly heartwarming, and just also incredibly, it lets you see something you wouldn't, can't experience for yourself.
Have you seen that, Bahe? Not yet. All right. You need to go check that out as well.
Okay.
You 200 movies.
You got to get you some anime, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I've that's the problem, right? I've not seen an anime that's worked for me. I mean, I like I've seen Akira and I've seen Ghost in the Shell, and that was, and those worked for me. Like,
yeah, but so you haven't watched an anime since the 90s?
Pretty much.
We need to give you a list.
Pretty much.
You should watch some A, watch some Studio Ghibli, but B, follow up.
I haven't seen any Studio Ghibli.
Whoa, wow.
We need to fix that.
Jesus. Your Name and this is a very good place to start, because this could be live action.
Right.
There is nothing fantastical. There's a little bit of fantastical in Your Name, but these are just, the script writing, I mean, the music, everything just comes together incredibly well. If it was live action, it would launch the careers of 1,000 like teenage actors. That would be just huge.
Right. Right. Okay.
But hey, what is your second choice?
My second choice is Arrival.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, what's that grunt, Ian McNally?
That's a grunt of agreement.
Agreements, yes.
Hey, just because we chose our list doesn't mean we don't overlap, guys.
Oh, no, yeah.
So, yes, 2016 movie that we only got to see in 2017, yes, that we're very thankful to be able to get in cinemas in 2017.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, the first note I put down here was that I skipped work for that screening. But for me, it was the subversion of an alien arrival to Earth movie, right? Yep. It's not a conquering alien thing. It's not a battle fighting war thing. It is a story about language and time and how knowledge will save us all eventually, and how we should stop fighting with each other and start holding hands and learning from each other. And that was really, really something for me. I really like that. The central conceit about time, and even the language thing about how the aliens taught the humans language, or their version of the language, and how it works in with time and the design of that. I could just go on. It was great. I loved it. I don't know what else to say.
It's some really out there, cool sci-fi concept we've never seen, wrapped up in a really cool sci-fi concept that we've seen a lot of, and also wrapped up in Amy Adams being cool.
Yeah.
Essentially. That was what that movie was.
Again, it's like Get Out. It's like Stranger Things, like I said.
Yeah.
You watch that movie and you're thinking...
You're thinking one thing.
One thing.
Yeah.
And then goes to somewhere else, and like, I remember watching it and going like, they're going into weird language and time things. Yeah. This is great. Awesome.
And even then, like, the theme of the... Well, not the theme, but one of the themes in the film is time, right?
Mm.
But the movie itself is told in a really weird time wave. So it works out quite well.
Similar to Dunkirk, where they basically... It infuses every second of the film, the idea. And that, again, is great filmmaking.
Yeah.
And it's just the fact that you're surprised at an idea in a movie. You know, I mean, we watch so many movies like, well, he did it. Or, he's dead.
Yeah.
Or he's your father. Or it was the ghost in the toilet. Or something like that. You know what I mean? You can guess these things coming and you're like, whatever. But when you're genuinely surprised by a movie, it's like, you're so smart.
Yeah, no, you couldn't see anything about this movie coming. And also, what's more, yet again, another great example of a movie that needed to be experienced on the big screen.
Mm.
I mean, I go back to this, to the opening of this film, and how, you know, Denis Villeneuve waits to show you The Craft.
Yeah.
He doesn't show it to you in the news footage. He doesn't show it to you anywhere. And
also beautifully realistic that, like, you know, Amy Adams doesn't realize it for a while. She's too busy getting wine and going to work.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And as the helicopter is flying, and then you finally see this craft come into view, it is the perfect amount of time that allows this to settle in. And so you see it with Amy Adams essentially for the first time.
It's again playing with time.
It's playing with time. It's very, very clever.
Now you're thinking with portals.
Yeah. Oh, God, no. But even everything about it, like production-wise, the design of...
Everything except her anti-gravity hair.
Yeah, her CG. I was going to say, my two problems were that dodgy CG stuff with when she goes into the plane, whatever. And the other one was... the alien design being I was a little like octopus thing.
The knuckles.
Yeah, I don't know. Octopus thing. I don't know. But other than that, it was great. I really liked it.
My second choice is War for the Planet of the Apes. Matt Reeves. And I think this is the conclusion to one of the most perfect trilogies in modern cinema history. I think every recent Planet of the Apes film has been absolutely incredible. Andy Serkis is a god. And if he needs to be nominated for an Oscar for that performance.
Before he dies. He needs
right?
to be given like a CG award or something. There's to be some kind of mocap award.
Actually, even forget the mocap award.
Just performance
award. The performance award. You forget that Caesar is an animated character. Yeah. You're watching this and you're so emotionally invested in this piece of computer imagery, right? And it's all because of Andy Serkis. But also, Matt Reeves kind of pulls off the impossible, right? He ties up a storyline which makes you hate humanity.
Yeah.
Like, there isn't even a moment in this war movie where I am rooting for the humans. I'm like, you deserve to die. You've screwed everything up.
Oh, no, you're rooting for the humans to die.
Yes, exactly.
You're openly rooting for Woody Harrelson to get his comeuppance and for all the other generals just sort of wallow, get a big piece of rock in their face. Yeah.
Correct. And also, you know, and because there's always a human surrogate, right? In all of these movies, whether it's an alien invasion movie or something, and even if the aliens are the good guys or whatever, there is a human surrogate. There isn't essentially, I mean, there is a mute character of sorts or a lost character, which is a human child, but she's not really the surrogate. I mean, Caesar is the character, and the fact that
you've been with him for three movies now.
He has. Yeah. But the fact that you are not looking into the mirror, that you are not identifying as the viewer with anyone else on screen, and still have this emotional connection to strange CG monkeys is amazing. I mean, it was beautifully written, it was beautifully shot, and the ending as well was just such a nice wrap up to the series. Yeah. I was enthralled with this movie. I was
tearing up at the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just as he was reaching the, what did he call it? They were getting to the place.
Promised land.
The promised land, yeah.
Yes.
And then he sits down on that rock and I'm just like, oh my God, don't do this. Don't do this now. Don't make me cry over a CG animated ape.
No, but also it feels to me like this is the only way, right? In the sense that when studios, you know, they have a franchise, it's not a tentpole franchise. So I think they give the director a certain amount of freedom, a lot more freedom than someone who's making Star Wars. Or
also, they've made like what, 16
movie.
Versions already. It's like
right? Yeah. And they're
we'll
not
always
that,
have Charlton Heston. It's not like we're not going to change that.
Yeah. And they're not that invested, or at least it seems like Fox wasn't that invested in Planet of the Apes, which led to this perfect conception of three movies.
But I mean, we can say that, but those movies cost a lot of money. There's a lot of CG apes.
I mean,
they might be able to write some of that off as investment because they did mocap in the rain, in the jungle, in the first two. And it's like, no one's done that before. Like, captured the actual actor's performance on an outside location. And maybe they'll pay this all back in future technology to be able to write it off.
But you can see the progression of that CG tech from the first one, right? The first two were good, but this one is just balls out gray. Sorry.
Monkey balls out.
Yeah, monkey balls out gray. Because like even in the close-ups, you can't tell it's not like a thing that you can poke, right? No, because it's just, because I was watching it and I kept pausing the film going, I can't see.
Where's the joints?
Yeah, I can't see the break in lighting. I can't see the difference in color. It's just spot on all the time.
Yeah, and you know, it goes back to this idea of, I guess, franchises and trilogies and everything that everyone else is trying to do, which is, you know, tell these multi-story arcs across God knows how many decades and whatever Marvel's doing with 20, 30 movies. It's nice that you have a trilogy that was so well thought out and conceptualized without a plan. I don't think they plan to have a Planet of the Apes universe. The first movie with James Franco did very, very well. Yeah. And they thought, you know, this is a good story, brilliantly told. I think there are two more stories to be told.
And one of the moments of that year as well,
Caesar
says no, and you're like, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it still gets me because that build-up and the tension is tremendous. War of the Planet of the Apes is my second choice for 2017. Go check it out if you haven't seen it. Ian, choice number three.
So we review a lot of superhero movies on this podcast.
Because there are a lot of superhero movies out there.
Yeah. And, you know, you got to put one on the list. But I was looking at, he's not the movie critic's critic, but there's a guy on YouTube I watch called Movies with Mikey.
Yes.
Find him on Twitter at MikeyFace. And he put up around Christmas his Wonder Woman show. Now, his shows are just like, this is what I liked about the movie and everything else. And there's always, it's like he peels the onion for you. And it was watching his video on Wonder Woman that came out. It just struck me how, like, yes, it is kind of effortless how much it gets right and how many things it does well. So my third choice is Wonder Woman because we've all seen the other Warner Brothers movies. You know, they managed to take a dumpster fire and turn out a good movie that again has some fantastic emotional beats in it, that deals with PTSD in a way that movies generally don't, that's set in World War I that you never get to see. And it was something he said as well that really brought it home for me, which is that everyone tells Diana what to do in this movie. Everyone. Her mother, the other Amazons, the gods, Steve Trevor, not so much, but everyone, the English generals, she's always been told what to do. She always does what she knows is right. Mm. And I just thought that's an incredibly good message. And then you get to the No Man's Land sequence. And again, I wish I was smart enough to point these things out. He points out she doesn't fight anyone in that sequence.
No, she doesn't.
She just is out there protecting people.
Yeah.
And I just thought it worked incredibly well. I mean, the ending is a little bit weak with the over-reliance on CGI, but the genius having Steve Trevor relay his final message while she can't hear him and thinking they're not going to find out what happens there.
I love that moment.
And the look on his face, I mean, sometimes I want to punch Chris Pine's face, but the look on his face as his farewell happens is just fantastic.
Yeah.
And fair dues to Patty Jenkins. Like, Marvel have had 20-something movies and they have not been able to do a female-led character movie, even though they've had Scarlett Johansson in their back pocket as Black Widow the whole time. Patty Jenkins was able to knock it out of the park on her first try with Wonder Woman. And I just think that deserves to be recognized, and I hope that she gets to do Justice League 2.
She should just do all the DC.
All the movies. All the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just take off whatever his face is.
Whatever his face
Zack
is.
Zack Snyder?
Yeah. No, I'm not even going to say his name. Just get rid of him. Yeah.
In case we grant him entry, isn't
it? Yeah. he's like one of those.
He's like a vampire. You have to invite him in.
And then he will never leave.
No, I agree. I think Wonder Woman was definitely a standout. I remember all of us leaving the cinema after watching that press screening, and we were like, that was good, right? That was really good, right?
We needed each other's permission to say that we really liked it.
Yeah, because I think we went in with tremendously low expectations because of everything that had come before.
Yeah.
And
Because Batman versus Superman made me physically angry.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And Patty Jenkins, unfortunately, whatever happened with Justice League, but Patty Jenkins essentially kind of gave that franchise a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. And if you want a quick picker-up, just like look online for videos of Patty Jenkins showing Gal Gadot how to swing her sword and jumping around, because it's just pure joy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's videos of it. I think it must be on the DVD or something. It's behind-the-scenes footage, and she's just leaping around, and it looks great.
Oh, I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman, too.
Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
She is Wonder Woman. But hey, what is your third choice of movie of the year?
My third and final choice is a movie that really surprised me. It's Colossal with Anne Hathaway and Jason Sudeikis. It was not, again, it's one of those I wasn't expecting movies. I was expecting funny. It was a little funny at the beginning, but then went really dark really quickly. And just got really heavy. The conceit is pretty straightforward, right? There was a
what?
No, but hang on. The explanation of it was a little late to the film, but that idea that the monster was a point, the monster comes from a place that they were at when they were younger, that they had fought, or that their toys were torn apart.
Mm.
So that was it. That's very straightforward. But the them figuring it out.
Oh yeah.
And
they become the manifestations of these monsters in Tokyo.
Rather the monsters were a manifestation of themselves. Right, their inner demons and inner monsters, right?
Yeah.
So that I really like, that physical manifestation of internal monsters. That I really enjoyed that idea. I thought the ending was a little easy-ish, maybe. But, I mean, it was great. I liked it. I liked Jason Sudeikis' character. He starts off really nice and then just becomes a real monster at the end when he figures out how to be a monster. And it was great. I know a lot of people who didn't enjoy it as much, but I thought it's definitely up there on my list.
Oh, and Anne Hathaway is tremendous as a drunken, broken person.
Yeah, that pulls herself together and becomes this monster.
Mm. She pulls herself together to be a monster.
Yeah.
I mean, like you said, you don't expect it. It's another smuggler. This movie is, this year, our list is all smugglers. The movies that look like one thing and turn out to be something completely different.
Yeah.
Just like Jason Sudeikis.
Yes.
I totally agree with you. Colossal is a great choice. I know, yet again, another movie that I was so surprised hit Malaysian cinemas. And I was so glad to be able to see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
I'm hoping people go watch this film, right? Like, go get the DVD, go buy it on iTunes, because it is really worth watching. It's not a big budget thing. It's not fancy explosions. It's not super haha funny.
Yeah.
But there is something really deep and really painful and really sort of dark about this that is worth watching.
My third and final movie for a movie of 2017 is Blade Runner 2049.
Mm. Surprise anyone?
Surprise
anybody? Anybody?
No? Hey, I love this movie. I mean, so, you know, 30 over years in the making. But for me, this was the kind of film that I had my jaw open throughout. I mean, you know, the plot aside, the twists and turns in the movie aside, I think visually, Denis Villeneuve has never failed to deliver, not just in his big sci-fi epics like Arrival and Blade Runner 2049, but even in something like Sicario.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because he's given the opportunity by studios to allow his films to breathe. But all of his movies are incredibly long. And you know me, I'm one who hates long movies for the sake of being long. But in these situations, in Blade Runner 2049, even in something like Arrival, there are these moments that they're just extended moments that make you, that allow you to get lost in the film.
You can luxuriate in it.
You can luxuriate.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah, yeah.
And the pacing of the dialogue, it's stuff you don't necessarily see in cinema these days. And also to create a sequel 30 years later that stands neck to neck, head to head with the original, I think is an impossible task. And he came closer than anyone else, I think, and you disagree with me on this one, Ian, but I think Rian Johnson comes close. But I know you have your issues with that film. But no, with Blade Runner 2049, I know a lot of people felt that there was nothing in the film for those who hadn't seen the original.
Yeah,
I disagree with that because I think as a piece of cinema, as a piece of art, this was wonderfully executed, wonderfully acted, with a story that resonates as much, if not more, in 2017 than it did in the late 80s, in the early 80s.
And it even has a car chase in the third act.
It even has a car chase.
I mean, what more could you want?
The biggest problem of Blade Runner 2049 is, of course, it is the movie that nobody expected it to be because the trailers were quite misleading.
Mm. Yeah.
And so I guess for a lot of people who went in to watch this movie expecting a Harrison Ford action thriller only to have him show up in the third act and not do very much but talk, I think they were greatly disappointed.
But this movie, before when he turns up, like, Villeneuve manages to get one of the all-time great performances out of Harrison Ford. He's actually acting. It's something he doesn't do very often. Yeah. I think that's why J.J. Abrams dropped the door of the Millennium Falcon on him when they were making The Force Awakens. It's like, now you're going to act, or you're going to lose your foot.
Stop being Harrison Ford.
Because there's just moments where he's talking about stuff and you can see the memories on his face.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, you can't fake that.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just thinking about that time that he had a bad sandwich on the set of Blade Runner the first time around or something. But like, whatever he does, it works incredibly well.
But even Ryan Gosling. I mean, you know, Ryan Gosling gets rolled out there as the heartthrob
This is Denis Villeneuve's Fight Club. He's just like, I wanted to destroy something beautiful because he's just going to beat up Ryan Gosling throughout the movie.
Yeah. But no, but Ryan Gosling, gets rolled out as the heartthrob all the time. But no, he is an actor's actor. I mean, he gets into every single role. And if you look back at his movies, they're so very different.
Mm.
Everything he's pulled off. I mean, this is the kind of his first venture into science fiction and fantasy, probably since Young Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
but it's something, you know, I think that
he's got a knack for.
He's got a knack
he's
for.
Comfortable.
Exactly. He's comfortable in this role.
And I think, and not a lot of people, you can say that about, right? Like, there are quite a few actors who just don't seem comfortable in science fiction. I think, you know, I would probably say Tom Hanks, who tried it with Cloud Atlas, which just was a little weird.
That was a weird movie anyway, though.
Yeah, that was a little weird movie, yeah. But no, I agree. I think...
Dade DeHaan?
Cara
Delevingne?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, those, yeah. But yeah, you're right. I think Harrison Ford showing up when he did was the perfect time for it.
Yeah.
You want him in the movie more, but that point where he does actually show up, you go like, yeah, I know why he's here now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works.
I was thinking about all the things that I loved about this movie and trying to gather my thoughts before talking about this. But I think for me, the standout is just watching it in the cinema. That experience of watching it in the cinema with the sound design, I missed Vangelis, but... This movie
they did
was,
a good Vangelis alike.
They did. Yeah. But also, like, this movie was a different beast.
I was terrified when one of the trailers had like
that weird electro dubstep Vangelis.
Vangelis is like they were just adding like into the background of everything. I was like, if they do this, I'm going to murder them all.
Yeah. I know, but I did. Yeah, but this movie's a completely different beast, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's and Zimmer did good in this one.
Yeah,
God knows I have my issues with Zimmer.
But even the soundscape, I think a friend of the show, Leon Tan, talked about that as well, I think. Just like, you can take 3 to 10 seconds out of any section of this movie, and just the noises of the fans, you'll know what movie it is.
Yeah, and also, you just take any three to five seconds of just an image, and you know what movie this is.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stand out of the Blade Runner universe you have in your head from having seen the first one, right?
No, because they didn't go nuts with that either.
Yeah. No, but they also developed in a beautiful way. There's no mobile phones in the original. There's very little kind of anything like mobile phony in this either.
Yeah.
There's no touch screens. There's like grimy, nasty tech.
Yes.
One of the most beautiful and small moments I remember was just that, you know, the guy who is at the Fagin kind of character with all the kids. When you first meet him, he looks like he's dressed in rags.
Yes.
And when he goes up to the office, he opens the coat and he's wearing like a Sherlock Holmes style.
Yes,
because he's in administrative mode.
Yes, and I was just like, that's such a small moment and it's brilliant.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
Now, Blade Runner 2049, I need to watch it again. It just came out on digital.
Oh, and you've already bought it. Because I only saw it once in the cinema because I did not have 2.5 hours to spare around that time.
I've already bought it, yes. Yeah. I'm looking forward to all of those special features. Yeah.
Mm.
All right.
I like how Uma called me over. Buy it. Blade Runner is out. And I just bought it. Thanks. Thank you for making me walk across the office for that.
He has his computer set up, so he just says, it's out. And it's just one click.
Yeah.
Purchase, done.
Done.
Those are our three favorites for the year. But before we wrap,
let's start the year on a bum note.
let's start 2018 on a bum note, because we've also got the three worst movies, I guess, in our opinion, of 2017. And wait, let me tell you, there were a fair share of bad movies that we were forced to watch and had to put ourselves through, but these three, I guess, particularly stood out. Ian, let's go with you.
All right, I'm gonna just get some also awards to almost worth. I want to call out Resident Evil: The Final Chapter. It's been almost a year since it came out, but it's not the final chapter. What the hell, movie? Don't call your movie the final chapter when it ends with setup for another movie. Alien Covenant annoyed me because it's again, we've seen what Ridley Scott can do. Do better.
Yeah.
Do more. I don't really care about this android. Just do something cool.
With Xenomorph.
Scare me.
Exactly. The Mummy was like, well, I didn't realize people could waste Tom Cruise. But I think it's
The Mummy destroyed the Dark Universe.
Yeah.
Yeah. One movie destroyed a potential
franchise.
Yeah.
Well, they've destroyed the franchise twice now. The franchise that would not die. That's the real beginning of the Dark Universe.
That should be a documentary.
For me, it's got to be Flatliners. I just was like,
wow, really?
It's not really a great. The first movie just has a nice place in my heart for like the evil kid that was beating the life out of Kiefer Sutherland.
Right.
And they had so many opportunities to do something in this movie, and they squandered every single one. Mm. Like, there's a mild shock in that one of the main characters actually doesn't come back from flatlining at some point and it ends up badly. But like, you put Kiefer Sutherland in it and he's not in any way tied to the original movie. And I've heard since that there are cutscenes that might tie him together, but they don't even, it's like, why are you even doing this?
Yeah.
It is literally, well, probably someone's going to talk about the emoji movie, but this is the waste of time movie.
Yeah. But this is sort of like what I had the problem, my problem with Ghostbusters, right? Like, I completely understand everybody's all up in arms about how it's great to see women in that role, blah, blah, blah. But why make it a standalone? Why not just continue it, right?
Why not make the... I think we solved it on the show when we did the reviews. Like, why not make it that the Ghostbusters are down on their luck, or they're not, you know, ghosts have been down and these girls take over a franchise, because it's a franchise thing. Yeah. And just Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd are there just to get the paper signed.
Yeah. Which would be great.
And
which
they hand over, and they hand over the old crappy proton packs. Yeah. And what's her name? Holtzman is like, well, I have a few improvements in mind. Dan Aykroyd is like, no.
And again,
something simple. That's it.
And again, it's the same thing with Flatliners, right? Why are you ignoring the original film? Yeah. Why not just follow it up? Like, oh, they stumbled upon this professor who's also in the film.
Yeah, it's like,
he's also.
If you're going to mine the past for nostalgia,
mine it for nostalgia.
Yeah. What do you do?
Don't just grab a name. Because
if you're going to do something flatliner, you're going to do something different with it. Do something different with it as well. Yeah.
Like, don't call it flatliner.
They're not even that. You know, what the visions are aren't great, and everything is just like, and there's too many characters. Lose two characters.
Yeah.
And you haven't even talked about all the narrative inconsistencies and the structural inconsistencies and the fact that they throw in VOs when they feel like it and take it out and all of that stuff. Yeah. I mean, there's so much wrong with that film, but yeah, you're right. It's just, it was a pointless exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, we've talked, all our bests are like, they make you feel something, they make you surprised, they make something. This made me want to go and have lunch.
Really angry.
Yeah, angry lunch.
I will top you by saying my worst film for 2017 was The Malay Regiment.
Which I haven't seen, thankfully. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. And cheers. Yeah. That movie is also just, it's not just a colossal waste of the audience's time, it's a colossal waste of the audience's money. And not in the sense that you paid for the ticket, but in the sense that you paid for taxes that then went to making this film, because it's funded, partly funded by FINAS.
Correct.
And like my notes of this...
And MDEC, so it's actually, MDEC, you know, funded...
So a bunch of people
double
are
responsible. The losses.
Double the losses, correct.
So like, I'll read out just quickly my notes on this because I had to think about it. I lost a day of public holiday to this trash. Absolute trash. Oh Lord, why am I still talking about this? This is absolute trash. Budget was misspent. Acting was horrendous. Set design prop work was horrendous. Script was borderline racist and borderline lazy. Why or why did this movie get made? The person who awarded this movie money needs to be fired.
Was this the one with the Lamborghini in the background?
Yes. This is the one with the Lamborghini in the background.
That's about right. That's about... I have never seen Bahir so angry as when he was leaving this film.
Yeah.
There was a quiet, surging rage.
No, because in a previous lifetime, I used to make films as well. And I know how difficult it is to get the money. And again, there's conflicting reports about how much they got. But they got a fair bit of some. They got a lot of money to make this movie, and it did not translate on screen, and that is what bugged me. You could have misspent it by shooting helicopter shots. Oh, by the way, helicopter shots in this film were terrible.
They felt like CG composites that you from got the from 90s. iMovie. Yeah,
from a children's show in the 90s. And so that's my problem with it. It wasn't that they didn't have money and made a bad film. It was they had all the money and they still made a bad film.
Mm.
And that just burns me.
It wasn't filmmaking, man. It was money laundering.
That's it was money laundering. That's what it was, yeah.
All right. My worst movie of 2017, there was a tie, but I'm going to have to pick one, right? So I'm going to pick The Emoji Movie.
Ah.
The tie was, of course, at Transformers The Last Night, but you kind of expect that when you go in to see Transformers. Yeah, so. There was no chance that you would walk into Transformers and gone, ooh, this is surprisingly amazing.
Yeah.
I was hoping for Anthony Hopkins, but now, he just needed the money, I guess.
Now with The Emoji...
Oh, yeah, now I remember this movie. Yeah.
That's right.
I was like, ugh.
Now with The Emoji Movie... yes, we thought the idea was bad as soon as they announced it. But then again, there was a part of me that was hoping, hold on, I thought the Lego movie was going to be a bad idea and just a cash grab until they completely subverted the hero's journey and made a great film.
Yeah.
The Emoji Movie is wrong on every level.
It's like they fell out of the cinema decision tree and hit the wrong branch
all the way down. It was bad writing. It was lazy comedy. It made me hate James Corden.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, this and the Peter Rabbit trailer are like, you know, it's like, what was the movie? There was some trailer we talked about recently. It was James Corden and I instantly I instantly lost interest.
But there is not a single redeeming fact about this film.
All they don't know how phones work.
They don't know how phones work.
Like, you know, there's an idea that you can use the idea of your home screen or where the apps are laid out to build an adventure. But like, you go to Spotify for a bit. It's like, let's name some corporate overlords that we can appease with our funny face movie.
Get money
sacrifice.
From
and that's the problem, right? Even if you're making a movie about technology and phones, you need to know more than the audience, or at least pretend like you know more than the audience when you're crafting that storyline.
Yeah.
This is just completely lazy. It was a group of writers sitting in a room thinking, oh, that'll be funny. But in 3 years, the three years it took you to make this film, it's not funny anymore.
You know what they could have done? They should have done what Wreck-It Ralph did, right? They pulled all these game characters from our history and sort of interacted with them.
Yeah, but that would require talent.
You see, the thing is, they tried to do all that. They did all of that kind of stuff. So they got ideas from the Lego movie. They got ideas from Wreck-It Ralph. They got ideas from Inside Out. They got ideas from all these things. They put them in a big bucket and they left it overnight, and the cleaning lady threw it out and just left a bucket of feces instead.
Yeah,
and then they took that and made a movie out of that, remembering bits of what they put in the good bucket.
Put Patrick Stewart in the role of the feces.
Yep. Yes. Not even pale imitations of that.
No.
Just horrible renditions.
That guy's not funny either. Like, we were literally sitting there going like, I feel nothing.
Exactly.
Like, we were very rare. Like, we don't talk in movies. We castigate other people for doing it. We're like, it's still on.
Can we change the channel?
It's like, the will to live is slowly leeching away. It's just...
This is what they show people in Guantanamo Bay.
That makes sense.
This movie's a war crime. Because it goes out of its way to be bad.
It seems to be.
Because it's one thing to be incompetent or be stupid or whatever.
No, this
but to hit every single beat is a real wow.
And to show this to your children. And to show this to your children in an age when we get things like Your Name and Coco and A Silent Voice.
And Inside Out.
And
films that deal with real things in real ways and have...
And the Lego Batman movie, even if you want to make something funny and smart and clever, all of that's there, and then you make this.
I talk about this, I think, in every podcast now, but it's like, it's humanity. We have to stand on the shoulders of giants.
We
can't go back and just say, look, I invented fire, give me VC capital money. You have to stand on top of what's gone before. It's like... Well, that's just Jaws. Do Jaws with something else. Well, he's a laser beam. That's Austin Powers. Go bigger. Do something else. Well, the movie's from the shark's point of view. There you go. There's the movie. You know, do something different.
Do Sharknado.
Yeah. Once. Not seven times
or something. With Ian Ziering. I mean, Emoji Movie tops my list of worst of 2017.
Made me sad face.
It made you very sad face. That's our list. We want to know what movies you loved and hated in 2017. Please talk to us and tell us all about it. We know some of you are already making lists on Twitter and Facebook. Remember to tag us when you do. I'm on @UmarPagan.
I'm on @McNastyPrime.
I'm @BahiWai.
You can also tag our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/@themoviesmy. Let us know what you loved and what you hated. This is At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.